One thing I remember, it was the signing of the Bill of Rights. I did see a couple of members cry in the coalition, and it was just like very heartwarming for me because I'm like, I'm so happy to share that experience of having Domestic Workers Bill of Rights passed and the governor signing it.
A new state law gives New Jersey's domestic workers critical labor protections. Hear the inside story of how it all happened, next on A Third of Your Life.
You spend a third of your life at work. We're all about making it better. This is the Rutgers School of Management and Labor Relations podcast.
New Jersey has more than 50,000 nannies, house cleaners, and other domestic workers, mostly women and immigrants working in private homes. A study by the Rutgers Center for Women and Work revealed widespread exploitation of this essential workforce, including wage theft, no paid time off, no lunch breaks. But the New Jersey Domestic Workers Bill of Rights, signed by Governor Phil Murphy in January, is meant to change that. Welcome to A Third of Your Life. I'm Steve Flemish, and our guest host is Naomi R. Williams, an assistant professor in the Rutgers School of Management and Labor Relations who studies working-class activism. Today, they're talking with Jennifer Garcia, a 2021 graduate of our school, who took what she learned in the classroom all the way to the Statehouse as a domestic worker organizer with New Labor, one of the worker centers that successfully fought for the new law. Now, on A Third of Your Life, Naomi R. Williams.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm so glad to speak with you today. Thank you for agreeing to have this conversation. You know, I've admired your work in New Jersey and your community activism for several years now. So it's a real honor to be able to talk with you. My research really looks at centering the lived experience of workers and the ways that they shape the political economy of their local communities, their states, and the nation as a whole. So it really is a privilege to talk to you today about the New Jersey Domestic Worker Bill of Rights. Congratulations on the passage of the bill. I know it's been a lot of years in the work, and we still have a lot to do. I just want to take a moment to talk about the bill and the coalition involved in getting it passed, what it means to working people in New Jersey today and in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. I really, after this Bill of Rights passed, because we've been at it for 4 years since 2019, definitely for me, it felt like a sigh of relief, like a big weight off my shoulders. So definitely I do appreciate the words of congratulations, because I'm like, yes, it was worth it, but it took so long.
It did. Let's start off. Who are domestic workers in New Jersey?
So domestic workers, just to let you know, I will talk about the 2019 report from the Center of Women and Work. That's how actually the coalition started, because they surveyed domestic workers. So domestic workers are basically workers who work in a home. They can be, for example, nannies who work in individual homes. They could be home care workers, or basically, you can take care of the elderly and not be, how do you say, certified as well. But also, there are people who clean homes too. They do the laundry. They do everything to keep the home clean and keep your families healthy. So those are domestic workers, including au pair workers too. Because one of the things in the Bill of Rights is to broaden the definition of who a domestic worker is.
So there are over 50,000 domestic workers in New Jersey and working in individual homes, sometimes multiple homes, right? Temporary, full-time, part-time, live-in or not necessarily living in, but all sorts of different types of work arrangements.
I can't believe I forgot to mention that. But yeah, there are live-in domestic workers, and there are also workers who travel from afar too to get to their workplaces. Or either they make an arrangement with their employer to take them to work or maybe bring them back. But yeah, live-in and full-time and part-time domestic workers.
I think the COVID pandemic opened a lot of people's eyes to essential workers. And domestic workers are definitely essential workers because they do the work so that other work can also be done. Unfortunately, domestic workers have been outside of employment law.
I am an alumni of the School of Management and Labor Relations. And one of the things that I feel that barely sticked into my head in taking classes there is about the National Labor Relations Act. So basically that act was to get everyone out of the Great Depression, you know, give people labor protections, but also establish a minimum wage. But yeah, since the 1930s, domestic workers here in the U.S. have been excluded. And that exclusion means not having a set minimum wage, not having set hours to work, also not having a written contract or break, basically basic labor protections. So that's what the coalition has fought for, to have basic labor protection for domestic workers, that now we are the 11th state to have a domestic workers' bill of rights. And I think the first state to have a domestic workers' bill of rights was 10 years ago, and that was in New York State.
Being outside of existing labor law, can you talk a bit about the challenges that domestic workers face here in New Jersey?
In my time in working here in New Labor, I definitely have heard stories of wage theft and also how humiliating it is doing the work for a full day, or it could be a full week, or sometimes a full month, where an employer promises to pay, but the employer doesn't pay. So wage theft is still very pervasive in all the state of New Jersey. And definitely when we intake on those cases, definitely you see all the emotions from the worker of being upset, but also being angry because they weren't paid for a job done. In addition to that, one of the most disheartening things also is like, where can you make a complaint? So there really isn't where you can. Maybe a Department of Labor, yes, due to like paid time off or sick time. But usually stuff like that is not enforced with the Department of Labor. But also it's really hard. For example, if you have an arrangement to work in a home of an employer, not a company, where do you go make a complaint? So people come here at New Labor and talk about what happened. And then also because there's no written contract established yet, usually when we call the employer and the worker, usually is he said, she said, or they said. And it's very hard to see who's telling the truth. But to be honest with you, with New Labor, we always go on the side of the worker. So for that, what we do is, like, for example, we record addresses of the employers who don't pay, and we communicate that with the workers here so no one else can go through that. But also with not having a written contract, there are workers who face accidents in the workplace, either if you're cleaning, you're mopping, and there's a slippery floor and you slip, who is responsible? Will the employer recognize you for that accident, or will they just say, get out my house, which has happened before here? Like, here you go, I give you $50, get out my house, I don't want to see you again. So that has happened too. So there's many struggles. And then also, because at New Labor, we have 6,000 members, but here in Lakewood, it's like 300 and counting. This is where we come in and train people about their labor rights. But also, this is something I really like, that the English classes at New Labor is very unique. It's more conversational and pushes people to practice, because one of the obstacles is also knowing the language. There could be employers who know different languages, but if you know at least basic English and know how to say pay me now, or I now charge this, or this is the products I need, or I'm hungry, I need a break now. Basically, that takes you a long way.
Indeed. Now, you've mentioned New Labor quite a few times already. Let's pause for a moment and talk about New Labor. It's such an amazing organization. Can you tell us a little bit about New Labor?
Yes, definitely. So New Labor has existed since the year 2000. So we have 20 years organizing. It first started as, for example, giving English classes and computer classes to the community of New Brunswick. The first center was in New Brunswick. And we branched out to Lakewood, more about educating day laborers about their rights. And then also has been a lot of wage theft in Lakewood with day laborers before. And then the last center is Newark. So we have three centers. So they started with OSHA trainings. Since Newark is so close to New York City, a lot of the workers look to get OSHA certified and take those courses. So we educate and train workers to know their labor rights, but also organize to do things together. For example, direct actions, but also negotiate wages. And we do that also because we offer English classes. So we educate and train and empower workers to basically create change in their own lives, in their workplace specifically. And also we push for policy to represent the workers who are most vulnerable.
That's great. And you already mentioned that you're a graduate of the School of Management and Labor Relations. So how'd you get started with New Labor?
I remember I took a youth and work class at SMLR, and the Professor Towson, I really liked, I looked at the syllabus, so it was really good, but I was kind of a little, not scared, but a little intimidated because it was a lot of reading. And in that youth and work class, I really liked how she engaged with the students and also brought guest speakers to our class. Someone from New Labor came and talked about what they do, the English classes, and that most of the membership in New Brunswick is from Oaxaca, Mexico, which is where my parents are from. So I was like, oh, wow, I never heard of this organization. I want to know more. I remember in July of my junior year, I started my first internship then. And it was very interesting because I was helping organize restaurant workers. But it was fun, though, because that was the first time I ever went to the State House. And I think at that time, they were pushing really hard in the coalition to pass the licenses for all. I really liked what they did. So I was like, okay, let me do more. And then ever since then, I've been interning every semester until I graduated.
Is that how you got involved with the Domestic Workers Coalition?
Yes, because I was a transfer student and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I had ideas of like pursuing a legal career, but then I saw that the philosophy program wasn't for me. So then I did share a personal story with my counselor. Shout out to her, Ms. Henry, because not many counselors want to listen to you. They say right off the bat, you should do this, you should do that. But for her, it was more unique because she asked me, what was I passionate about? Which is a really hard question because at that age, I was like, I don't know what I want to do. I just want to graduate and get out of here. So I told her a personal story about my father suffering a workplace accident. He got burned by an industrial oven at his previous workplace. And I told her how I saw how unfair the workers' compensations law in New Jersey, but I think around the whole U.S. is so unfair. And it's like underpaid because things are not with inflation. I bet it's even more underpaid. Like basically the compensation is not even there. So I told her that. And then I said it was really hard on my family because like we had to adjust on my father not working and then also him going through something scary. And hospital visits and doing all that process. So I guess that's how I chose to be part of SMLR because I said I want to know more about labor. And that's where I guess a whole new door of a different profession came about. And I enjoyed the SMLR classes. And then I also went to career services and I said, well, I'm graduating soon. I don't know what I want to do. I don't know what careers I could do with this degree. And I did talk to Carlos from SMLR. He's not there anymore, but he was very great. And then he said, hey, you know, at your internship, they are hiring, right? And I'm like, no, I don't know. I didn't know that. They're hiring a domestic worker organizer in Lakewood. I'm like, what's Lakewood? I thought it was like, because I heard of Wildwood before. I was like, oh, it's probably at the shore. It's something fun. Let's see what I need to do. So he read the job description. He was like, you match all of this. Why don't you apply? So then he helped me out through the process. I applied. And then before I sent my resume, I think it was like 2 days after I spoke with Carlos, the director of New Labor was like, hey, we're hiring for this. Are you interested in applying? And then I was like, oh, what a coincidence. Someone just told me about that. Yeah, I'm going to apply. So then right off the bat, once I got my resume done and everything was very quick, I sent it over. And when I graduated, I went straight to work. Basically, May 16, I went to work.
Right after graduation.
Yeah, so it was like, basically, I didn't take a break, if that makes any sense.
Hopefully, you've worked in some break time since then.
Yeah, I have taken some compensatory dates and also some vacations. I wish it was more, but there's always something happening, always something.
Can you talk a little bit about your personal development and building your leadership skills since you've been on the job?
Yeah, so definitely it was very new to me. Out of everyone, I did have the internship experience. I interned for 3 semesters. It helped me out because I already knew what organizing was. But the thing that I did not know was the background of domestic workers. So during that time, in talking to the coalition, NDWA had some seminars of like We Dream in Black and other seminars. So that really helped me out. But then in my mind, I was like, I wish we could do more stuff in person instead of Zoom. But I know it was the pandemic, so we really couldn't do much stuff in person. But I also have gone to NDWA conferences where they have shown resiliency. It was a motivating conference because I realized that it's okay to pause and feel your emotions. And then also, as organizing domestic workers, you need to make space for people to speak up about, like, you know, what's going on in the workplace. But also me, myself as an organizer, I said to myself, wow, I wish we had more spaces for organizers because sometimes I tend to absorb a lot in my environment and that affects my day or my mood. So I was like, I need to look for something else. So I know that Deb from Center of Women in Work, she sent me, I think it was a flyer from Will Empower, saying that they're encouraging people to apply and that they would choose 20 women in leadership or people in leadership. So I applied and I also saw that NDWA had it in its announcement emails. So I was like, okay, maybe this is confirmation that I should apply for it. And I do remember way back when that when we had guest speakers in Professor Towson's class, I guess that was the first time I met Cherie Davis because she talked about her program, but basically didn't connect to me yet because I was not an organizer yet. So I was just like, wow, what a small world, how things connect. We met before and now we meet again. So I applied for that. I was like, I hope I get chosen. And then I remember once when I was commuting to work, I pulled over because I saw my email and I saw that I was accepted to the program. I was in my vehicle and then I screamed. I was like, no way. There's no way I was selected because probably there's other people from bigger unions. That's what I thought. Because I did hear that, not from Will Empower, but I heard like from other seminars that worker centers and unions are very different but similar. So I thought that there were other better candidates. So I did the program for a full year. And it's the best thing ever because that was basically a space for organizers to talk more about what's going on. We have a lot of shared experiences, either if you work in a worker center or at a big union, we have similar experiences. And I love their mission, which is basically to support women in the movement to seek higher roles in leadership, which is something I want to do in the future. And definitely seeing people from other worker centers, I think it's called CTOL from Minnesota. I can't remember where. I really like the network because I feel supported. And then there's another worker center called the Asian Progressive Association of California that they have like strategies of enforcement that I really admire. If it wasn't for that space, I feel like I wouldn't have met other wonderful people.
Great. And so I just want to go back because you mentioned NDWA, and that's the National Domestic Workers Alliance. So I just wanted to make the whole title known when people are listening in case they aren't familiar with it.
Yeah, that's what we're under. So it's a national organization, National Domestic Workers Alliance. So how they work is that they have its membership by affiliate organizations. So for example, like here in New Jersey, there's a lead organizer from the National Domestic Workers Alliance that coordinates events or coordinates, for example, we're going to have a celebration soon, and also coordinates the work plan of how it's going to go. And meetings. So yeah, as an affiliate, New Labor is an affiliate and there's other 6 groups. I will name them. It's Unidad Latina en Acción, Wind of the Spirit, Lazos América Unida, ADECAR. They're in New York and New Jersey now, which is very awesome. Casa Freehold, us, and I don't think I'm missing anybody else. But yeah, we're a coalition and basically NDWA pushes policy. Their mission is to pass a domestic workers' bill of rights in every state. because, you know, we're addressing the problem of domestic workers being excluded from the National Labor Relations Act. And the mission is to pass a Domestic Workers Bill of Rights. And like New Jersey, again, is the 11th state.
And again, congratulations, New Jersey. Well done, us.
Right.
It's exciting, too, to hear you took advantage of these opportunities for the trainings and the professional development in the National Domestic Workers Alliance, but also through the Center for Innovation and Worker Organization. And it sounds like you've worked quite a little bit with the Center for Women in Work. And I know the Center for Women in Work has a close relationship with New Labor. Mm-hmm. And so to see these, all of these things come together, like you said, all of these worlds colliding, it's great to have you on the podcast talking about the way this has unfolded over the last 4 years.
Thank you. Yeah, definitely. One thing I learned is that since New Labor is a worker center and we're the community coalitions, like we need to talk to each other in order to pass like these life-changing policies and to make change in our own communities.
So can you talk about some of the big wins in the law? Like, what are you most proud of?
Okay, yeah. I am most proud of the notice of termination and then also the written contracts. The reason being is because, one, the written contract will address the issues of wage theft. Finally, there would be something in handwriting, or maybe New Labor or the rest of the coalition can be that person people go to help them see, like, if everything the worker wants is on the contract. For example, the pay that you think is the best, also the working conditions, and also how many hours you work. That would definitely help us a whole lot, but also the notice of termination, because now in the pandemic and with inflation, like if your employer just says they're unhappy with something, they just say, hey, you are fired. One day to the other, you're like, okay, now I got to look for another job. But now with inflation and aside like the pandemic, you worry more about your finances. So I feel like, yes, it will be tough to enforce. There's a lot of work to do, but that is for me like a ray of sunshine and hope for a path of domestic workers feeling more empowered. So that's what I'm very proud of. There are some stuff that was taken out. It's not perfect. Like, for example, I will say about the Domestic Workers Board. So we know that the Seattle, they have a Domestic Workers Board where the domestic workers sit at the same table with the Department of Labor, shareholders, and the community to speak about how to better the domestic worker industry and also hear cases of a domestic worker, for example, suffering discrimination or any type of harassment or wage theft. And that was part of our Bill of Rights, but it was taken out because the reasoning that we heard was that if we have a board, then everyone else will want a board and resources, of course. But I really, really wanted that to be part of it because I don't work alone, I will always say. I'm with the Committee of Domestic Workers. It's a group of 15 to 20 domestic workers here at New Labor. And they are the ones that take decisions about like marches that we're going to do, how we respond to a wage theft case if we want to go and do a direct action outside the employer's house. But they basically have a lot of agency. And I see how powerful they are here at New Labor. Imagine how powerful they are with more agency if that was included in the Bill of Rights. So that's what I'm upset about, but really happy about the contracts and the notice of termination.
And so, you know, there's a clear path for continued lobbying, right? Seated at the table is so important. That's actually been the role of domestic workers throughout the history, right? Of not just New Jersey, but throughout the United States and around the world. Domestic workers have advocated for themselves and negotiated with city and state officials in order to get protections because, again, they are so often outside of labor laws.
Yeah.
So what does that look like in each individual situation? You know, the history of domestic workers organizing to me has always been such an inspiring story because you're working in an individual house or home. It's not like you have coworkers who you can go to. So what do you do in those terms? And this board that you have, the Domestic Workers Board at New Labor, they have built a network to talk about what are the issues, right? That report that you talked about from CWW, getting the survey information And pulling all of that together, it's really a long line of domestic workers doing these types of things to advocate for themselves over and over.
Yeah, but it wasn't for the committee, but then also the coalition. Like, we're working hand in hand. If it wasn't for, like, you know, each playing a part, doing the audits and the surveys that we did in 2019, or if it wasn't for the lobbying, and also today we just came from Trenton. We were testifying at Senate Appropriations at NJIT, because definitely we want Department of Labor to have the funding they need, also to fund us so we can do that education and training that domestic workers need. And if we do get it, that would allow us to reach domestic workers at a broad scale, finally reach those 50,000 domestic workers and counting to know about their labor rights. And definitely you are so right about how the nature of the work is, because they work in a home. Most of the domestic workers are isolated. And it's not like, for example, I guess I'll pick an Amazon, but if you work at Amazon, you can talk to your workers. I know they are organizing and there's other places organizing, but in domestic work, it's very tough to organize because people are hidden, is individualistic, and also that work, you don't see it. But if it wasn't for a domestic worker, basically employers won't be able to go to their jobs because they rely on the domestic worker to watch their children, or they rely on the domestic worker to cook and clean after, like, basically a long day at work, something that you may need help in, or, for example, take care of your elder parent when you are busy working. Basically, I feel like domestic workers are the peace of mind of society.
Indeed, that's a nice way to say that. And you've been talking about Lakewood. This all started in Lakewood, right? Can you talk a little bit about that local ordinance there and how it grew into a statewide bill?
Yeah, so there is a lot of connection. I have a great relationship with the Committee of Domestic Workers. And if I ever decide to grow more in my leadership, that's going to be the hardest part. Leaving them behind, basically I will talk to them, but they have a very special place in my heart. Like, it would really touch me so much. But yes, in 2013, March 30th is International Domestic Worker Day in Latin America. So because most of our membership comes from Latin America, on that day in 2013, that was the first International Domestic Workers March here in Lakewood. So it was a group of women who were going through the same situations, like, for example, not being given a break, not having a set lunchtime, but then also working on your knees. So one thing that you saw a lot at that time was working on your knees, because employers said that the floor would be cleaner like that. And because language barrier, but also people who do the jobs don't know much about their rights, unfortunately, some workers accept that. So definitely they went marching. And a very good member, her name is Doris, she was there since the beginning. And I remember her saying vividly, we were so scared. That was our first march. We didn't know how the community was going to react. Just to give a little context, Lakewood has a religious community. And sometimes with trying to respect religion, you know, from an employer, some things may be told that you have to clean more because of a special holiday, or the domestic workers needs to be there, for example, for Sabbath, because there's a big dinner and there's more dishes. It's a lot of that context. So in 2013, afterwards, once they saw that the march went well, that people heard them, they had basically posters that says pay me now, posters of International Domestic Workers Day in Latin America, that we are women, not machines. So my coworker Martha, actually, she was there too at the first march. And then since then, there was a lot of momentum. And the workers, they came here and said, we have issues. And the issues are wage theft, working from your knees, and the intermediary people who promise jobs, but then they don't give you jobs. So I'm looking for a job. And someone says, hey, I can help you find that job. I'll place you at this employer's home. So they charge you for that. And then next thing you know, you go to the address and there's no one there. And you call them back and say, hey, I thought I was going to work here. And then the intermediary person like ghosts you or basically does not talk to you. They already got what they wanted, which was the pay to place you in that job. And basically, that's wage theft. So there was a lot of those three things there. And then during that whole time until I think it was like September, the domestic workers, they're like, we need to go talk to city council and let them know that these are the issues going on. So they went to city council twice. City council is like, no, we're not going to listen to this, or like, we don't have time. And then the third time, they went more ready with interpretation. Most of the people in city council did not speak Spanish, they only speak English. So they went prepared with someone who would translate the testimony of, like, you know, the realities of the domestic workers. And then they also presented a 10-point Bill of Rights at that time, which was, for example, one, respect in the job. Two, you must have a break. Three, will be paid $10 an hour at that time because people used to pay $5 or less. Then also no work from the knees, which is something very important. We don't see that a lot now, but before there was a lot of people who work from their knees. And I have it here on the side, but also not have a lot of tasks to do. And then also for the employer to give food and water, because one thing is that employers here predominantly eat kosher. But let's say, for example, I want to bring my rice and chicken. I can't eat my rice and chicken at my employer's home. So sometimes we saw that domestic workers would eat in their car or outside. Or if the employer was conscious and very nice, they would say, hey, this is a designated spot for you to eat. So there was a lot of those issues. So city council only recognized it as a resolution and not an ordinance, unfortunately. So basically, that resolution happened on November 21st of 2013. And every time I see the pictures of the members that went with the poster of the 10-point Bill of Rights, that's like the beginning. That's the beginning of everything. And basically, they went. They weren't afraid. Maybe they were, but they did it. And ever since that resolution, what New Labor has done is hold assembly, worker assemblies to see like how much we want to charge as a collective or like what issues are going on. And I believe it was in 2021, August 21st of 2021. I believe a lot in numerology. So I guess number three is really important. Adding the numbers of two and one, we had a worker assembly where the worker said, because of inflation, we're now going to charge $20. So that's very badass because we're worth more. Our work is a lot. We do more than just cook and clean. We do so much. Some members would tell me, I feel like I'm a counselor for my employer because they talk to me and I talk to them. We have similar experiences, or sometimes the children, they tell them personal things. So they are the domestic worker. They keep the order, but they also have that listening ear and that relationship of trust. So, yeah, that's a little of the story of how everything started. And I believe in 2019, that was when we actually had a meeting with the coalition for the first time, saying that we need to do something. We need a domestic workers' bill of rights. There's all these issues going on. And that's when they agreed to say, hey, let's spearhead surveys and see what domestic workers are going through. And I believe ever since then, I think that's how the coalition was born. I wasn't there at that time because I started in 2020, a year after.
Yeah, that's a beautiful story. And, you know, it really highlights too where you ended there, the skill, right, of domestic workers that often gets overlooked. People think, oh, it's housework, but it's so much more than just housework, right? And it's something that everybody deserves dignity and respect at work. And so many of these workers show up and give their all and are really skilled and go above and beyond. And so to have these workplace protections is a wonderful thing. And I really do think it's important too to highlight the ways that getting involved in local politics, right? Going to the city officials to say, these are our joint issues, and then gathering the information, even for people who just saw the news story or just heard about it, it had to be so empowering and inspirational. You know, it makes me think back to, you know, a long time ago, right? In the 1880s, domestic workers in areas across the South, Mississippi and Georgia, got together and said, let's set our rates and let's set the terms and conditions of our work. And then when they ran into opposition, they went to city officials and they said, this is what we're going to do. And when the laws came back and said, oh, they tried to regulate it and put all of these parameters around it, they said, okay, well, let's show you how essential we are and let's withhold our labor until you recognize what our alliance has shown. And so this legacy over the years of domestic workers fighting for their own rights, despite the fact that they are often outside of what are considered traditional workers, is really important for us to celebrate. And I think it's really important for workers to understand that being involved in local politics matters in terms of their day-to-day lives and, you know, to be able to not work from their knees, to have some sort of recourse, right, for wage theft, which is, you know, I'm hearing is a huge problem.
Yeah, it is. Like, definitely, it's a story that is very inspirational. I did know a little bit about how the workers organized in Mississippi in the 1800s, because NDWA, National Domestic Workers Alliance, they cover it in We Dream in Black. But I also saw it, I believe, when Willem Power was talking about intersectionality. And they mentioned how domestic workers, especially in the African-American community, organized since a long time ago. To be honest with you, I thought it was something that just started. Well, that's my point of view because we're organizing in New Jersey. But then when I saw that history, I was like, wow, then there's so much stuff that there has been done and what we could learn from. Once I saw that, I was like, wow, I don't feel so alone now. And the domestic workers don't feel so alone now either. So yeah, it's very inspirational. And then also one thing I remember, it was the signing of the Bill of Rights. I did see a couple of members cry in the coalition. And it was just like very heartwarming for me because I'm like, I'm so happy to share that experience of having Domestic Workers Bill of Rights passed and the governor signing it. So it's a very big deal. So yeah, that experience, I will never forget it.
Yeah, it's a huge deal and there's still work to be done. You're working on the budget now and really just advocating for having enforcement parameters supported through the budget. What are some other next steps for the coalition?
We have been going to the budget meetings. We know that the budget is supposed to be ready by June. Hopefully we do gain that. But also as a coalition, we have been internally meeting about what our work plan looks like. So in behalf of New Labor, our next step is to do employer outreach because that's something that we see that there isn't capacity for. But because New Labor, we focus on education and training and building leadership, our own community members spearheading projects and goals and everything. We saw that with the surveys too. Basically, people who surveyed domestic workers was our own membership and also the rest of the coalition's membership. I feel like we're more advanced because definitely we have the committee of 15 to 20 women. And out of those 15 to 20 women, at least like a couple of them, they can help out in reaching out to employers because of having the ability to speak two languages. So I feel like that's very good. But then also as New Labor, we have supporters who really want to help us out here with the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights. So that is our next steps, talking to employers, seeing how they feel about Domestic Workers Bill of Rights, but also us training them about their duties. That basically is our next step, but then also meetings with Department of Labor as a coalition. We will have meetings with a couple of them to see like how we can work on the education and training aspect, but then also how do we bring a case to them? For me, I see like it's something that there needs a lot of structure in still. So that's what the next steps are, but also celebrating, taking the time to pause and celebrate. So we are going to celebrate in the end of March too. I know I invited you too, and also some CWW people. So yeah, ever since this Bill of Rights passed, definitely, I can speak in my behalf. I received numerous emails about being interviewed, and then I had to forward it to the coalition and say, hey, what do you guys think about this? Definitely, I felt like we had the spotlight on, and it's because it's a huge deal. So there's more to do, and I believe it will be in July when the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights becomes in full effect. So one of the things that we want to do too, as we're gearing up to meet with the Department of Labor, is basically reach out to our community and see how many people have cases of complaints. And we want to show them to the Department of Labor, like, this is why we need something urgently, because there's X number of workers saying this is going on. There's another campaign called the Dali campaign. There's mostly cases in Newark, New Labor Newark, and New Labor New Brunswick. But that's because workers work in a company and there's more than five. So now that the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights is going to come to effect, we want to see how we can make that connection of, like, if there's a worker abuse, how can you get a temporary worker permit? So as New Labor, we've been successful in a couple of cases that workers have a worker permit now because they have a case with Department of Labor. The Department of Labor gave a statement of interest. And also the National Labor Relations Board is also involved with that. It's something that's not advertised a lot, to be honest with you. I'm not sure why. But as New Labor, we're educating and training workers that this is a really good incentive for people to speak up. But the issue is, if you're an individual worker, how does that affect you and how can you make that connection? So sometimes I would say I can scratch my head and say, I don't know. This is a lot of this work is with strategy and talking to people. So we'll see.
Education is really important, and celebrating the wins, pausing and celebrating the wins are really important. So I am looking forward to that event on the 27th. And you've already had a couple of celebrations. I know this is Women's History Month, and I know New Labor had a Women's Celebration Day a couple of weeks ago, I think. So it was great to see all the celebrations happening, and education too, educating workers and employers about the parameters of the new law and working conditions, and then pathways, right? Pathways to coming together. And that's actually really important, is to build those relationships and make sure everybody understands where we're headed and what that's going to look like. So congratulations again.
Thank you. Yeah. I know, because March has, I believe, 31 days. We're trying to celebrate every day, basically. But yeah, definitely, I feel like it was very eventful. I love using Facebook because I get to network with people too, but also on my LinkedIn. Because I feel like working in this organization, like, there's cool pictures. So I get to brag about, like, hey, I went to a Newark March about Women's Day. I also had a Brave Space in Lakewood and all of these things. So I get to show off. So I feel like we should celebrate the role of domestic workers, but also people who are marginalized like us in history. We should celebrate us every day so we can finally feel the most important thing ever. Because I feel like our role, if it weren't for us, I feel like nobody else would be here, if that makes any sense. But also,
it does.
Yeah, right. So definitely, I love the summer. The summer is my favorite time to organize because people are out there. People are out there, basically, and they have time to pause. And also, like, you know, I believe here in Lakewood, the summer, unfortunately, just talking a little bit about holidays, because employers go to vacation too. The summer is the time where domestic workers will listen to you more because they're unemployed for 2 months. That's what happens in Lakewood. So I don't know. It's just my favorite time. And also, I just love the warmth and going out in the community and meeting new people.
That's great. Jen, thank you so much for talking with me today about this. And it was wonderful to hear your journey too, from being an undergraduate student at School of Management and Labor Relations and doing internships with New Labor to working with this Domestic Workers Coalition to see finally a New Jersey Domestic Worker Bill of Rights. Very excited that Governor Murphy signed the bill into law and that you're working on the budget path, and looking forward to all of the wonderful things to come.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I feel very honored. But yeah, I would just want to say the path sometimes for a career is not very clear, but at the end, it makes sense. So any undergraduate person listening, or graduate student too, things work out at the end. But also, I feel like SMLR, they have the best staff too. They're amazing. Like yourself too. So definitely, I feel like if you want to know people who understand, like, what it is to be like a student, but also work, take a couple courses in SMLR. It will open your opinions about things, but also I felt like when I took those classes, reality made sense, and that it's not an issue with you, it's an issue of how the society works.
That's funny. And I was just talking to students in an SMLR class right before I got on this call. And I told them I was looking forward to our conversation afterwards, what we were talking about, our career paths and how do you choose your career and where do you go? And I think it's a fitting circle, right, to that conversation and what it looks like. I told them this is my dream job, to tell the history of working people at Rutgers and the School of Management and Labor Relations. It's the best job I can dream of having. And it's been a wonderful time to do this here also in New Jersey, in a very diverse state with this working class history and this history of activism and workers actually shaping the laws of the state is really, to me, really remarkable because it shows the power of what workers can do when they come together. They build these coalitions like the ones you're a part of. So congratulations. And it's really amazing to have seen your work over the last few years since I've been here. So thanks again, Jen.
Thanks for listening to A Third of Your Life, the Rutgers School of Management and Labor Relations podcast. For more information on our academic programs, faculty, and research, visit smlr.rutgers.edu.